Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. This week, we'll take a look back at some of the top stories of the past year. And for many North Carolinians, the biggest story was also the most destructive. Hurricane Florence made landfall September 14th, just south of Wrightsville Beach, and then slowed to a crawl, bringing torrential rains that flooded Interstates 40 and 95, closed schools for weeks on end, and created more than $1 billion in agricultural losses alone. Governor Roy Cooper stressed the need to learn as much as possible from Florence's destructive path, with the hopes of lessening the damage we could see from future storms.
Here we've had two so-called 500-year floods within a 23-month period, and three 500-year floods within a 19-year period. We know these aren't 500-year floods. They're coming again. So we need to make sure that we provide for smart recovery, make sure there are more things like catch basins that can help divert floodwaters, to make sure that instead of rebuilding back into an area that floods, to either do a buyout or an elevation of that home to make it stronger. We know that we cannot afford to have I-95 and I-40 underwater for long periods of time. So our infrastructure has to be more resilient. We're going to have to raise up some of our roads. We've got to make sure that our wastewater treatment plants are more resilient because a number of them flooded over during this storm. Everything we do has got to be based on the fact that we know these storms can come again. We had about half of the people who were hit by this storm are at 150% of the poverty level or less. Those are families living paycheck to paycheck, and now they take the brunt of this storm. We have to help them.
Grady McCallie of the North Carolina Conservation Network joined us in October to discuss some of the key lessons he took away from the aftermath of Florence's fury.
Now, both Florence and Matthew were what are called 500-year-plus storms, which means that there's about a 0.2% chance that you'd expect them to happen in a given year. What's significant about that is we've now had two of those in 3 years. And we had, and Floyd was one, and that's within a third within 20 years. It's possible statistically that they still could be 500-year storms. It's much more likely that our calculations are just wrong. And this goes to the resilience point, is that we really need to know what the best science can tell us. It may be that that number was always wrong. It certainly is changing as a result of climate change. We see that with smaller storms that are getting more intense, and it may be the large ones too, getting more intense or more frequent. We need to know if what we've been calling a 500-year storm is actually something we can expect to see every 10, 15, 20 years. And if that's the case, way broader than just environmental issues, we need to think about what that means for infrastructure investments, for what a strong and viable economy for Eastern North Carolina looks like if we're going to get catastrophic flooding every 15 to 20 years. Obviously, it's home for a lot of people. We can still live there. We can still have a strong economy, but we have to think about what that looks like. When we talk about getting pollution sources out of the floodplain, we're really talking about that 100-year floodplain. We really need to get people whose property is flooding over and over again out. That needs to be coupled with investments in affordable housing, because if you think about it, a lot of the places that are affordable are in the floodplain, and you can't just buy their homes if they're renting or if they own. You can't just buy it unless you also have a place for people to go and some policy to get there. There are also a bunch of uses, industrial uses or pollution sources that really shouldn't be in the 100-year floodplain. After Floyd, we had a voluntary buyout program for a lot of hog farms in the floodplain, but there are still dozens of hog farms that are in the 100-year floodplain. And so it's not surprising that when you get catastrophic flooding like this, some of the lagoons, not a lot, but some lagoons breach, many more of them overtop, and the waste in them mixes with the floodwaters and can get carried across the landscape.
And hog farms, these animal feeding operations, industrial hog farms, are not the only kinds of problematic places that lie in the path of these storms. We also have just toxic waste sites and even coal ash.
You know, before Floyd, so this is nearly 20 years ago, we had a lot of junkyards in the floodplain, and we bought those out, and we said those couldn't be in the floodplain anymore. And that's really worked, because you don't hear about that in floods like this. You don't hear about that kind of damage. We haven't done that with other sources of pollution. One that we really need to address are poultry farms, confined poultry farms. We had something like 5 million chickens at least die in Florence, and they have large piles of manure. Those facilities are essentially unregulated in North Carolina, unlike swine farms, which do have permits. So this is just a gap. The state doesn't even know where a lot of those poultry farms are, and that's a gap that really should be corrected.
This speaks to the whole issue, I guess, of environmental regulation and the resiliency and the strength of our environmental regulators in the state. Obviously, over the last several years, we've seen significant efforts to reduce the staffing, the funding for environmental protection in the state. This is about supposedly making North Carolina open for business and unleashing the private sector. But unfortunately, what it's also unleashed is a lot of environmental problems that might have been preventable. Do you think there's any hope that this is dawning on our state lawmakers and that perhaps we could see a turnaround in some of these policies?
Well, Florence should really bring that home. I mean, folks will probably recall that during the last session, one of the major environmental issues in the last legislative session was what to do about Gen X pollution, one of these chemicals that's in a class of perfluorinated compounds. Gen X is specifically in the Cape Fear, but the broader class is in other rivers in the state. And the Department of Environmental Quality asked the legislature for resources to get on top of that problem more, and the legislature didn't give it to the agency. Now, that was specifically around that issue of Gen X and perfluorinated compounds, but we've been seeing these cuts for a number of years now, and you can see the effect when you look at the response to Florence. The regional offices were just, I mean, some of them were flooded, but they just didn't have the extra resources to get out there quickly. So you had environmental advocates getting out to sites much faster than the department could.
Just volunteers.
Or professional environmental advocates like the river keepers going out and testing water.
Not public employees.
No, that's right. Not representing the state. And we need state agencies that are resourced enough to be quickly responsive, but over the longer term also to be addressing the issues that are a threat to health and welfare across the state.
We've alluded to the coal ash issue, and that's clearly one that doesn't just affect eastern North Carolina or places that have been inundated by hurricanes and floods. It's all across our state. That continues to be a point of contention. We had at least one, I'm aware of, coal ash basin that overflowed as a result of Florence near Goldsboro, but this continues to be a worry. Duke Energy takes the position that we don't need to excavate these coal ash basins as is being done in some other places. You think, I gather, that maybe that's not an adequate response.
That's right. Duke Energy has 14 different sites. There's multiple pits in some sites. They're unlined. They leach heavy metals and other contaminants into groundwater around them. Most of them are near water, surface water, and so it also leaches into the surface water. And our consistent ask has been to take these coal ash pits, take the coal ash out of them and put them in lined landfills away from water, which would also help prevent losses during floods. So we saw at the Lee plant water actually coming over where the coal ash sites are, and at the Sutton plant near Wilmington, a dam actually breaching into a lake there. Some of the test results have still to come back. River keepers were looking at the Lee plant and finding high concentrations of arsenic. State regulators checking them 4 days later didn't, but it's possible that the stuff is on the bottom. It's heavy. It's possible it's sunk down to the bottom of the river now. And could be harming the life that lives in the bottom of the river. So the basic message on these is we've got to get these ash pits away from our waterways and into lined landfills where they won't pollute the groundwater.
I've heard a lot of people say, you know, North Carolina is used to doing hurricanes. We've had a lot of these hurricanes. Hurricane Hazel, my gosh, in 1954 was terrible. And we're good at responding to these storms, which there's some truth to that. I looked at the numbers, though. In 1954, when Hurricane Hazel hit, there were 4 million people living in North Carolina.
Right.
Much of eastern North Carolina, even the coastal communities, the beaches, were very sparsely populated. Now we're more than 10 million. We continue to grow fast. We're using up more and more what used to be open land. It's paved over. It's now been developed. Aren't we reaching a point where we're really going to have to get serious about how we're going to have a sustainable economy, a sustainable state with such a fast-growing population? It just seems to me that we're facing a crisis if we don't get serious about planning for the next century.
Yes, that's right. And I'll say two things on that. One is a lot of the discussion up until now has been around what do you do to manage the smaller floods that happen more often? And we clearly could grow a lot better. We can manage our land a lot better. We can get problems out of the floodplain, the 100-year floodplain, so they don't flood regularly. I think what Florence signals is it may be that we should be expecting catastrophic flooding every 15 years, every 20 years, maybe more frequently. We need to know the science on that, but then we also need to tailor our policies because that's flooding way outside the 100-year floodplain. So it's good to have the policies that keep people out of harm's way every year, every couple or 3 years. But we also need to think about what it means to live with a vibrant economy and healthy landscape if we are expecting flooding of this scale every 15 to 20 years.
While state and local officials continue mopping up from Hurricane Florence into the new year, Policy Watch environmental reporter Lisa Sorg turned our attention to a new U.S. government report that delivered a dire warning about climate change and its devastating impacts.
The federal government, NOAA, put out a voluminous, thousands of pages long report. It's called the National Climate Assessment. It was the fourth one, and it was not good news. There is no way to sugarcoat this. The fossil fuels that we are putting into the air and continue to put carbon dioxide and methane and those sorts of greenhouse gases are altering the climate of the planet, and not in a good way. What that means for North Carolina is sea level rise, it's coastal flooding, it's inland flooding. It could alter growing patterns. It could alter our agriculture. It has public health impacts. You know, if you're elderly and on medication and it's 100 degrees for 40 days straight in North Carolina, you are not acclimated to that. You're not able to handle that. So it will definitely disproportionately impact people who are already vulnerable, who maybe don't have air conditioning or who cannot recover from a flood easily. There could be water problems because of bacteria. I mean, it's, you think, oh, it's just going to get hotter, or it's just going to, you know, there'll be more storms. But there's a domino effect that is really could be devastating. And we don't have that much longer to fix things. I mean, they think maybe in the next 12 to 20 years, we were already at the tipping point. We have to basically dial it back now, or millennia of our future generations are going to suffer from it. Governor Cooper did sign an executive order basically going in line with the Paris Agreement about reducing our fossil fuel footprint and clean energy goals and that sort of thing. But, for example, we still have a wind energy moratorium, at least through the December 31st in North Carolina. And the Trump administration just unveiled a clean coal initiative. There is no such thing as clean coal. So we have these very contradictory issues happening where the planet's scientists are sounding the alarm as loud as they can, and the Trump administration is basically saying, oh, let's burn more coal. And it's a very troubling, troubling situation.
Well, coming up next, we'll look at the comings and goings of North Carolina's top educators. Stay with us.